In his opening prayer, Brother Bill just began with the words, "As little children, we come humbly before thee." And that wording is especially appropriate to Brother Tim Krupa's choice of subject for the opening discourse of today, which will be of interest to all of those of us who have been parents. His title is Paul's Problem Child. Paul's Problem Child. Brother Tim.
Thank you, Brother Joe. Good morning.
Good morning.
It's nice to be with you. And I've enjoyed your hospitality very much. I've been encouraged to be here. And it's, I think Brother Larry used the word transformational. It's been a transformational weekend for me. Paul's problem child. If you think about the relationship that the Apostle Paul had with the different groups that he dealt with, it was usually quite good. Philippians. You remember how he opens his letter to the Philippians, and he says, "I thank God every time I think of you." That means they had a good relationship. Paul liked the Galatians. He went there on his first missionary journey. And that was the area that Timothy came from. So he had a lot of nice memories and a lot of good feelings. He went through that Galatia area several times. He had a good relationship with the Romans. We see that from his letter. And no letter has an ending like Romans, where he lists person after person. Give my love to so-and-so. Say hello to so-and-so. Greet the church, etc. Good relationship. Same thing with Ephesus. He lived in Ephesus for 3 years. And like the brethren there, despite some of the riots and the experiences he had with the world, he loved the church there. Colossae, when he wrote to Colossae, he hadn't been there yet, but he'd heard of all the good things that the class had. And one of his good friends, perhaps meeting him in Ephesus, which wasn't too far away from Colossae, was Philemon. And you see how much he loved. Philemon was a good example of the many brethren that Paul had a very close personal relationship with. And of course, there was Timothy and Titus, who he literally called his sons. So who does that leave? Well, that leaves the beloved brethren in Corinth. And Corinth was another story, friends. They had serious problems in Corinth. And out of all of Paul's writings, I would suggest that nothing addresses the problems of today like Paul's writings to Corinth. I'd say no other ecclesia had all these issues. One writer says that in the writings to Corinth, Paul takes the lid off the church, and we see inside what was going on. Everything you can imagine was going on in Corinth. It's probably not too wild an assumption to say that we probably have the same issues today. So the letter is not just a historical document, it's relevant. Now, I find these letters very, very interesting. And my engineering mind likes the fact that this represents 30% of Paul's writings. You know, I want very much to absorb, especially the New Testament, especially Jesus' words within the New Testament, but maybe next the writings of Paul. So I say in efficiency sense, if I can get a handle on Corinthians as kind of a topic, I've got a handle on 30% of what Paul wrote. That would be a good step. There's 29 chapters in the writings that we have to Corinth, almost 700 verses. Paul visited there at least three times. He says so. And he wrote maybe four letters. He lived there for a period of time. He lived there for a year and a half. Let's look first at the architecture of these letters. Why do we even care about the architecture? Well, for me, if I have a framework, if I can divide something into sections, I can remember it better. Instead of trying to remember the whole thing, I can remember part A, part B, and part C. And I think sometimes educators use the expression that you have to have hooks, you know, to hang other details on. So when I look at the architecture, it's not terribly important. Nobody's going to live or die on the architecture of these books, but I'm going to spend a little bit of time on it just to I think, help us remember the structure. It has helped me. So, architecture. Two main divisions, very cleverly named 1 Corinthians and 2 Corinthians. The first one has 16 chapters. The second book has 13 chapters. Now, the first interesting thing that we come across, and it's just interesting. It's not crucial. But in the first book, in the fifth chapter, Paul makes this expression, and he says, in my first letter, that's how some translations get it, in my first letter, I told you, now wait a minute, this is 1 Corinthians. So, you see the point. If you get a letter or an email, and it says, in my first email that I sent to you, I get these all the time because I don't respond to the emails, you know, really well, and so I keep getting these emails saying, in my first email, I asked you, etc. So here's Paul saying, in my first letter to you, it kind of leads us to believe that this letter, which we call 1 Corinthians, was not the first letter. There was some kind of communication, some kind of letter, some kind of note that went earlier. And he says in that expression there in the fifth chapter, he says that he's talking about immorality. And he says, I warned you about worldly brethren and worldly people and stuff like that. So the suggestion architecturally is that there's a section somewhere or there's some lost writing of to the Corinthians, boom, that goes before 1 Corinthians. Okay. As my Aunt Henrietta used to say, big deal. Okay. So, now, there is a suggestion by some writers that there is a segment in the 2 Corinthians in the middle of the 6th chapter that doesn't belong there at all. It has some logic to it. They say it's a fragment. And what happens in that 6th chapter of 2 Corinthians is that Paul is trying to make up for some problems that he had. And he said, you know, we opened our hearts to you. And he says, I beg you to open your hearts to me. Then all of a sudden, the verses change, and he starts talking about people with immorality. And he says, I warned you about this, and don't get married to unbelievers, and That's that famous section there. And then the next couple verses, he says, because make room in your hearts. He's back to hearts again. So you see the point. Not a big deal, but he's talking about our hearts. And then he switches off to another subject and he comes back to hearts. So the suggestion is there's a couple verses there, end of the sixth chapter, 2 Corinthians, beginning of the seventh. That might be that fragment that he was talking about, the immorality part. Okay, interesting. Nobody's going to live or die on that. So maybe there's a slice there of 2 Corinthians that goes in the beginning. All right, what becomes next apparent in architecture? We're going to look at the 2 Corinthians again. This one is a little more interesting because it's kind of confusing. You could divide 2 Corinthians into two parts almost. One is extremely stern. The Apostle Paul is just chewing them out. When you read it, he's defensive. It's like, is this the Paul that we all love and know? He says, you haven't been behaving right. I'm coming to take care of some problems. He says, I'm on my way. Some translations use the word punish. I'm coming to punish you. He says, I will not be put to shame. I will not spare anybody. You know, if this is the end of all of his writings, this is a bad ending. You know that expression, never go to bed on an argument with your spouse? This is the same kind of thing. You know, never leave a bad taste in somebody's mouth when you leave or something like that. If this is the end of Corinthians, this is a pretty rough ending. Because he is stern. He's tough. Now, if you look at the first nine chapters, it's totally different. How's he start? He says, I apologize. I said I was coming to you, but I didn't come. Now, doesn't that sound like a follow-up to that stern part where he says, I'm coming? Now, this heart says, I'm sorry I didn't make it. I apologize, but I hear that you solved your problems. He says, I love you. My heart is open to you. That was in that sixth chapter part. Open your hearts to me. This is a nice ending. So the suggestion is, architecturally, and you know, if you read through 2 Corinthians, it's confusing. You read through this 1 through 9 and everything is nice. And then all of a sudden you hit 10 and here's angry Paul. So it kind of works better if the angry Paul comes first, at least in my mind. And he's all angry and then he comes to the part and he says, I'm sorry. I didn't make it. I love you guys. You know, I like happy endings. All right. So the suggestion is, switch those two. Put the stern part first, and maybe the other part, the apology, goes second. Now, this is the end of the architectural problem. Let me go back to an earlier slide. And the thing that jumps out at me as I look at this book is the 700 verses. Okay, if I want to understand this book, I see 700 verses, and you know what I say to myself? I don't have a chance. I don't have a chance of remembering 700 verses. I don't have a chance of maybe even understanding 700 verses. So, and yet at the same time, I'm totally committed to getting a better understanding of these scriptures. I'm obsessed with trying to get a better understanding of the scriptures and studying the scriptures. I feel inadequate with my ability to work with the scriptures and know them and be conversational about them. Like the manna text this morning. It was from 1 Corinthians. It was from the 6th chapter. There was a verse there. Did I get the context of what that verse was? Did I immediately say, oh yes, Paul in that chapter was talking about... Okay, that's where I'd like to be. So I'd like to be at that contextual level where I really get the picture. And I just don't take a verse almost out of context. And I have the suspicion that I use scriptures out of context way too much. So, I can't start with the 700 verses. And what that has driven me back to is the 29 chapters. Okay, I've concluded that if I start with the 29 chapters, if I can get an overview of each chapter, if I can remember what's in each of the 29, and that doesn't sound overwhelming, I can remember 29 a lot better than I can remember 700. So I decided I got to learn the 29 first, then I'm going to go to the 700. So as we expand on this, I'm going to share with you my experience of trying to learn the 29 chapters. Taking a chapter approach to get to the context and the contents. So I'm going to, first of all, we're going to go through all these, we'll start with 1 Corinthians, 16 chapters. I hope that it only takes me maybe 10 minutes. Okay, here we go, 16 chapters. The first four are basically all the same subject. So we got four and one. The first four are about sectarianism. Now, Paul starts out with a bang here. I suspect this was the thing that was bothering him the most because he hits it the hardest, he hits it first, and he hits it for four chapters. There's a lot of other big subjects. He only takes a chapter. Not that he wrote in chapters. We all know that. But as far as the length of time, the length of the letter, that part. So he talks about there's a problem in Corinth. They're sectarian. What does that mean? What are they want to follow a leader. They have fallen into the human trap of wanting a person. The Israelites wanted a king. The Romans had their Caesar. The Jews had their chief rabbis. The propensity of fallen human nature is to want to follow a leader. That's what was going on in Corinth. And there were a group of brethren over on this side, and they said, Apollo is the greatest. Apollos, brother Apollos is the greatest. And over here, these brethren were holding up placards and they're saying, no, Peter's number one. Peter's number one. You know, you see these things on television. You see these people chanting. And then there's another group in the back. They're saying, no, Peter's the greatest. He had a vision of the risen Lord. How can you forget that? He's number one. So these factions, they were fighting in Corinth. You know what Paul said? He said, stop, stop, stop. Did I die for you? Was Peter on the cross? Will you stop it? The only reason that you're here is because of Jesus Christ and the cross. And you were led to that by God's Holy Spirit. Stop looking for these leaders. Four chapters. Sectarian. I like it. Sect. Four-letter word. Four chapters. One, two, three, four. Okay. to say that I am computer challenged is an understatement. Where's my mouse? It's probably over here, huh? Come on, mouse. Am I going the wrong way? There we go. Thank you. Okay, next chapter. Pretty famous one. It's about immorality. This is a story everybody's heard. Okay, Paul says it was so bad, he's never even heard anything like this out in the world. This is where they had this family situation. The boy and his father's wife. We know the story. Paul talks about it. The next two chapters. Clearly the sixth chapter is about taking our brethren to court. It's talking about legalistic issues. That was the man in the text this morning. Don't you realize you were bought with a price, but the price was Christ? This fits into the context of this legalistic thinking and this worldly approach of, I'm taking you to court. The seventh chapter is about marriage, how we're supposed to get along with our spouse. Then he gets into a section which I would overview as worshiping. What's the proper worship and stumbling? Maybe stumbling first. Idols, stumbling our brethren, eating meat. Number 9, it's a little bit of a digression, but he feels attacked in 9. And it's all about the accusations he's getting from them. It was not a pleasant relationship many times. They were at odds. They were attacking him. He felt attacked. He was defensive. He was defending himself. Chapter 9, just like 2 Corinthians 10, 11, 12, and 13. 10, he comes back to idols again. He says, remember about the golden calf? We heard lessons about 1 Corinthians 10 yesterday. 11th chapter is about women again. The women, this is the worshiping concept of how women, the women's role in the church. There's an interjection there about the memorial supper. 12 is about gifts. And since we have different gifts amongst us, you know what a really good illustration of that is? The body. Yeah, so in that same chapter, there's the body parts. 13th chapter, I don't know, that could be the most famous chapter in the Bible. Right? We know that one. No question about it. The importance of love. One of the most incredible pieces of literature and writing that exists. 14, he goes on to speaking in tongues. Does he say, can you speak in tongues? He says, yeah, tongues are okay, but you better interpret them. 15, to the Bible students, maybe that's the second most well-known chapter. The resurrection. Boy, there's no doctrine that distinguishes us from so many people like this one. That's the one I like to start with in my witnessing. If people want to know what I believe, I go right to the resurrection. You want to know how different I am from you? Yeah, I believe in a resurrection of the dead. How does that happen? It goes back, right? All the way. Ransom. Then Paul ends something we may not talk about a lot. He flat out says, this is now a fundraising effort. Chapter 16. We need money back in Jerusalem. All right. I don't know how long that took me. I think it was only like 7 or 8 minutes. We get the highlights, the contextual picture of the 16 chapters of Corinthians. Now, this part is going to be personal. And you can skip this part if you want. This is now, if you need to go to your internet, check your text messages, anything like that. Okay, I give you permission. I'm going to suggest a solution that you might end up thinking is foolish. And I'm going to take that risk. I'm going to take that risk that you're going to think I'm not very smart. That's okay. I'm going to suggest something that we all experienced when we went to grade school. You know, they expect you to learn many things in grade school. And I remember in science class, they were trying to teach us the order of the planets. I can remember this a little bit. And I know that there was the order of the planets was first came Mercury, then Jupiter, and then Saturn, and then there was Venus, and then the Earth came, and then Pluto. Yeah, Pluto was maybe third. So anyway, you see the problem. And so the teacher said, "No, you're not getting it. Let me help you with a memory aid." And the teacher said to us, "My very earnest mother just served us 9 pickles. My very earnest mother just served us 9 pickles." Do any of you remember that phrase from about the 4th or 5th grade? I see some hands. "My very earnest mother just served us 9 pickles." Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars, Jupiter. You see the point? The first letter of every word in that sentence is the order of the planets. I'm standing here 50, 60 years later, and I can do it. That's what you call permanent learning. That's what you call a memory aid. That's pretty good for an old guy. You know, it happened a lot to me in anatomy class. We had to learn hundreds of things, thousands of things. Muscles, bones, nerve, innervations, insertions, origins. We had to learn physiology. We had to learn cofactors, minerals, enzymes, thousands of things. So they taught us tricky little phrases, how to remember the bones in the wrist. Some of them were rather risque. I can't tell you the one to remember the bones in the list because they would cut off the internet connection. But you know what? Nobody that ever sat in that class forgot the order of the bones of the wrist. 40 years later, we remember the bones in the wrist. I'll tell you the problem. They changed the names of the bones. But those are called memory aids. Those are called mnemonics. If I can use that for the planets, if I can use that for the bones in the wrist, my gosh, could I use it for Corinthians? Okay, the next thing you're going to say is, "Oh, I'm too old for that." No, I got one more. I'm really taking a risk, okay? I had a birthday recently, changed decades. Those are the worst. You know, you can slide along for 10 years, but man, when that first number changes, whew, okay, I hit the traumatic one, okay? So what I'm telling you is I'm an old man, okay? I don't have a young memory like I had when I was 16. But because of our business situation back home and the national economy, our main business didn't exactly tank, but it's half of what it was. Okay, we're dependent on tourism and stuff like that. Nothing like it was. Half of what it used to be. We had to diversify. We expanded and opened up a new shop. And that project started 12 months ago. And we opened 6 months ago. Because of the new shop, I had to learn a new business. How can an old man learn a new business? Well, I did it. I learned all kinds of things. I'll tell you what the business is. Don't tell anybody else. It's about chocolate. I can tell you all the kinds of chocolate trees there are in the world. I can tell you where chocolate grows. I can tell you how it grows. I can tell you how the flowers are pollinated. I can tell you so many things that in my area, I'm now considered a chocolate expert. I did that in 6 months. Now, if I can memorize the planets, do you see what I'm saying? If I can memorize the wrists of the bones, if I can now, at this age, learn a whole new business, why can't I learn what's in Corinthians? So that's what finally got to my conscience. And I said, I got to do something about this. I've got to apply what I can do to the most important thing in my life. Because it's not the bones, it's not the planets, it's not the chocolate. Not even close. Okay, so here's the 16. The 16 chapters on the left, summarized. First one, you know, there's a couple chapters where it's the same thing. So I said, I'm going to make a sentence like, my very earnest mother just served us 9 pickles. I'm going to do that for Corinthians. I don't care how infantile or grade school it sounds. So I changed sect to sectarian. I changed the immorality issue to adulterer. I'm trying to make a sentence. So I need nouns and I need adverbs and adjectives and stuff like that. I changed legal to legally. And I changed the marriage thing to marries. As in the verb of I marry you or he marries. So far I've got sectarian, adulterer, legally marries. Okay, you know, I got a half a sentence. And then I changed stumbling because there's a whole section there about the meat to idols and don't stumble your brethren and things like that. So I changed stumbling to stumbled and worship to worshiper. So now I've got sectarian adulterer, legally married stumbled worshiper. I still have a sentence. Now I got two more concepts. And I got to do something with resurrection and donations. So I'm going to say that this whole thing then resulted in resurrecting donations. Donations were dead and now they're raised because this sectarian adulterer legally married this stumbled worshiper and that resurrected donations. Hey, I got a sentence. You know, it's every bit as good in my mind as my very earnest mother just served us 9 pickles. I'm driving down the freeway. I can think of that phrase and I can bring back 1 Corinthians into my brain. I can't sleep at night. I can bring up the sentence and I can remember what 1 Corinthians is about. Driving down the highway with Dawn, she says, give me the mnemonic for 1 Corinthians. And we start a discussion. It's pretty grade schoolish, but it worked for me. Now, this isn't the only way to do it. There's another way. We don't have to always make a sentence, but we need memory aids. Okay, I'll give you a couple examples. I'm going to start. Don't look at your notes. What's the 7th chapter about? 1 Corinthians. Okay, I didn't exactly hear a roaring answer. Okay, so let me tell you. This is how you remember what the 7th chapter is about. What, in Bible student numerology, what does the number 7 represent? Perfection. Right? Everybody got that one. That's pretty good. Okay. Now, in our everyday common lives, what is it that is about the only thing you have that's perfect? It's your marriage. Or it's almost perfect, or you want it to be perfect. Do you see what the connection is? Now, there's a lot of you who will never forget that. When I say now, what's the 7th chapter of 1 Corinthians all about? What's your answer? See, you got it. Okay. Now, don't think some of these are silly. I mean, you can think they're silly. It's okay. All right, 12th chapter. What's the 12th chapter about? Okay. Well, it's first the gifts. Okay, how do I remember that the 12th chapter is about gifts? December? That's good. December is Christmas. 12th month. You see, she's going to remember that. I'll tell you what I do. It's very close to her suggestion. Thank you, Camille. On the 12th day of Christmas, my true love gave me gifts. Right? She gave me turtle doves. She gave me princess singing. 12th chapter, gifts. I never forget it. And from the gifts, it's pretty close to then say, if we all got different gifts, we're all different parts of the body. I got those two linked. Okay, what's the 14th chapter of 1 Corinthians all about? Don't look at your notes. Speaking in tongues. Okay, but it's not the 14th chapter. It's the 14th chapter. And he speaks with forked tongue. Did you get that? Forked tongue? 14? Well, you say, oh, that's a third grade joke. Okay, but I'm remembering what 14th chapter of 1 Corinthians is. Okay, so forgive me. Thank you for tolerating that little section about how I'm trying to remember Corinthians. I recommend it to you. There's marriage. Second Corinthians, quickly. I'll tell you briefly how we get to this summary in our little class, and many times we have others join with us. Usually there's no more than 7 or 8, but I've done this with as many as 40 people. We read the chapter, and we pause, we get quiet, everybody tries to decide what's the most important verse in the chapter. Then we go around the room and we discuss it. We first read the chapter verse by verse. Then everybody picks independently what they think is the most important single verse in that chapter. What's the summary? What's the one that gets the point across the best? You know, there's a lot of verses that Paul is talking about something and he makes a side remark. He says, God is love. Okay, that's true. God is love. But that's not what the chapter's talking about. So, the most important verse in that chapter is not God is love. It's something else. So, we do that as a discussion. Everybody then says, this is the one I think is most important. And then someone says, no, I changed my mind. I think that what that sister brought up is a better scripture. And by the time you're done in 15 minutes, you have thoroughly discussed that chapter. Just the important verses. You haven't gotten off on tangents. As important as it is God is love. That's another study. So, what we look for is almost a storyline. So in 2 Corinthians, again, remember this is the apology section. The first chapter, we said that there's some advantages of reversing them. But anyway, the first chapter, first two chapters, is Paul saying, I'm sorry. I apologize. The third chapter, he starts out and he says, you want letters of recommendation? He says, do I need it? And then he goes and he uses an illustration about Moses. And then he says but we have the gospel, fourth chapter. And he says, but don't forget, we're all earthen pots. So there's the earthen jars. And he says, because you have the gospel, and especially because it's in an earthen pot, guess what? You're going to get persecution. Okay, so then he talks about how he was beaten and left for dead. And then he says, but you know what? Fifth chapter, this all manifests who has God's Spirit. And then he says, that's good because you have the ministry of reconciliation, the fifth chapter. And then he, in the sixth chapter, he says, you know, there's all kinds of extremes. experiences. He says, we're beaten down, but we're not defeated. And he talks about that we're joyful, and at the same time we sorrow. He says, we're very poor, we have no money, but yet we're rich in faith. So he goes back and forth, and he shows these different experiences. That's in the sixth chapter. And then he says in the seventh chapter, there's a storyline here, right? I mean, he just, some books are more fragmented and the ideas bounce around. But in a lot of the books, there's a storyline. He was writing to real people. Real people were listening. They didn't all have copies of the letter. The letter was read to them in the class. And so there's a storyline to the letters. And he says, finally in the seventh chapter, he says, Titus gave us a really good report. That's kind of what changed his anger. And then he ends a lot of times, you see, he ends asking for money. 8 and 9, he's asking again for money. That's another signal. This is the end of the letter. And of course, then the chapters 10, 11, 12, and 13, that's where he's at. That's the angry Paul. So, that's 2 Corinthians. That's the overview of 2 Corinthians. Okay, lost my mouse again. There we go. Do I have a sentence for 2 Corinthians? Of course. sorry, but the letter about Moses' gospel jars persecution, but manifests the reconcilers. So says bipolar Titus's generous diatribe. Now that's a little bit more complicated. That doesn't roll off the tongue quite like, you know, the sectarian adulterer legally married stumbled worshiper resurrecting donations. But here's another sentence. And for the first time in my life, for the first time in my life, I can give you a contextual overview of what's in 2 Corinthians. I couldn't do that before. Application. Okay. The problem child. This is what we're working up to. Okay. If you read Corinthians and it's just to memorize and it's just to be able to recite things, boy, are you missing the boat. Am I missing the boat? It's to apply. We can't be hearers of the word only. We have to be doers of the word. We can't be just Bible students. You know, there's actually a flaw in that title. What do we think of a person, we call them a professional student, right? They never get out of school. They keep going to this college, they change majors, they go here. Now I hear they're getting a master's degree, then they're doing this. Professional student, it's a term of scorn. That means they can never get out and apply it and get a job. Bible student, are we professional Bible students? That's okay, but we got to be professional Bible doers. Appliers. Something like that. So, you got to realize that all this discussion of architecture and chapters and the four possible letters, that's just an effort to get you to remember something that you can apply. So, that's what Paul was trying to get across to these people, these Greeks in Corinth. So these were the issues. Sectarianism, immorality, involved with worldly systems, problems in the marriage, family, idolatry, stumbling others, decorum in the church, including speaking in tongues, women's role. There's a list of doctrines. I've got that on another slide. Now, the thought might be, okay, how does my ecclesia, we know how Corinth did. How does my ecclesia do on these things? But that's not where I really want you to go. What kind of kid were you when you were growing up? Were you a problem child? I tell you, I had my moments. When I see the kids today, and they're doing their drugs, and they're doing this thing, I say to myself, well, I was not much of a problem child. But I think that back in my context, in the era that I lived, oh man, I still regret the trouble I gave my parents. You know, I was a little bit of a problem child. And do you know who Paul's problem child really is? It's me. I'm Paul's problem child. You're Paul's problem child. Don't think of the Corinthians. Don't think of your ecclesia. Go down this list and say, what about me? Look at the list again. There are some things we call, we segment as doctrines. I almost don't like the term because the first list is doctrines too. Doctrines are just teachings. The teaching about immorality is a doctrine. Don't just think that it's got to be something like the second presence to be a doctrine. I look at the list of doctrines, I think we do pretty well. I don't want to say I'm proud of the doctrines that we believe and we share, but I have a lot of good feelings about the doctrines we share and we hold dear and we have for years. There's a couple that I don't think we emphasize enough. I don't think we emphasize enough the gifts of the Spirit. I don't think we talk about that. I think we have gifts among us and we kind of suppress them. It's like, you maybe have gifts, but you know, you're only allowed to express the gifts that the group allows you to express. It's kind of a narrow group, you know. You can play the piano, you can lead singing, you can be a deacon, you can be an elder, you can be a speaker, but, let's not talk about the rest of the gifts. I think there's more gifts of the Spirit out there. Generosity. I think, we have extremes. We have some brethren that are very generous and a lot who aren't. It's probably 80-20 rule. I love that expression that there's a little story where the man says, do you tithe? Do you give 10%? He says, no, everything I have is the Lord's. And the other fellow says, well, the Lord would be a lot farther ahead if you just gave him 10%. The evidence of God's Spirit in our lives, I'm not sure we acknowledge how much God's Spirit is in our lives. We're a little bit too busy with all the issues, the idolatry things and that we get into. And love, can't ever have enough of that. Okay, that was in our opening hymn. It's God's love, to seek and know God's love. That's the best. That's the most important. And, they ended up that there was a lot of love in Corinth, and there was a lot of love between Paul and this problem child. So I remember that there was, I think it was a cartoon character, and he says, we have met the enemy, and it is us. Okay? We're the enemy. We're the problem child. At the end of the story of Corinth, Paul had a good relationship with them, I believe. And I think maybe Corinth was his best work. When you look back at his ministry and what he transformed and what he started with, this group, it was heathen. It was a heathen group of people. So I think the Corinthians ended up being Paul's best work. And I'd like to close with something, a beautiful phrase in the 15th chapter and the 58th verse. Therefore, my beloved brethren, be steadfast and unmovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, knowing that your labor is not in vain in the Lord. Thank you.